Just to reiterate what Barry had said, this is basically the same content in the seminar. We'll have an hour, and we'll try to be even a little bit more practical as far as breaking it down and establishing a vision for your ministry. But we will today deal with the content, the same content that we'll be covering in that seminar later on, so you would not want to go to both of them. Have your Bibles, open them to the book of Nehemiah. As we consider how to establish a vision for your ministry. I think one of the exciting things about conferences such as YELK is that it has, for many, provided an opportunity for a fresh beginning. It's provided an opportunity for evaluation and look at new direction. I think even the beauty of the place and this year, seeking to build in a little bit more free time than we have in the previous years so that you can spend some time thinking it through and firming up direction. That a conference such as this provides you a tremendous opportunity to establish a vision under some principles that the Lord would direct us in. As I look at this passage in this book, as I look at the life of Nehemiah, I find an individual who has been used in a lot of different ways, management, leadership principles, characteristics of a man who is very productive in his work. But I find some principles here that are helpful in looking towards the establishment of a vision. You know, the book of Proverbs says, without a vision, the people perish. I think not only do people perish in the sense of our not having as effective a ministry and reaching out to touch other lives, additional lives that are prepared and responsive, ready to hear. I think we ourselves perish. I think we ourselves die within when there is not that vision that motivates us and encourages us, that stretches us, and calls for us to reach for our fullest potential. I want to begin this morning by asking, what is a vision? What is a vision? Webster defines it as something seen otherwise and by ordinary sight. It could be spoken of as unusual discernment or foresight as a man of vision. When you deal with it in a practical sense, I believe you can look at goals and direction. The way this was revealed in Nehemiah's life, he was an individual who saw what other people failed to see. Some of you recall a story in his life. He was a cupbearer for the king, the period during the exile. And in this first part of the book, you find in verse 2 that his brother, Hanani, gave him the word that that some of the people that survived, the Jews that had escaped and survived the captivity, were in great distress, reproach. The wall at Jerusalem is broken down and its gates are burned with fire. And there was a sadness that came in his life that even as he would possibly seek to hide that while in the presence of the king and serving the king wine, the king discovered the sadness in his heart and asked him, he says, you know, what's the problem? And he says, well, how can I be happy when my people are in such reproach? And so the king asked him, he said, well, what would you like for me to do? And he pauses at that point for a quickie prayer and says, what I would like if I found pleasure in your sight is that you would commission me to go back to Jerusalem to build the walls. And you know, it was obvious that there was a problem in Jerusalem. The walls were broken down, the gates were burned by fire, the people were discouraged, there was no hope. The odds of them ever coming back was absolutely overwhelming. And yet Nehemiah saw something that other people failed to see. I think one of the great, great needs in our day is for men and women with vision. People who can see. You know, when the Pharisees looked at Simon Peter, I'm confident that they saw an impetuous, impulsive, hot-headed, unlearned fisherman. And yet when Jesus Christ saw Simon Peter, he saw a rock, a leader of men, a writer. He saw one who would be used to even help a group of men gel together that could be used in winning the world. It was a difference in being able to see. And so one of the things that I see as far as vision is concerned, what is a vision? It allows other people to see. It allows you to see what other people fail to see. A man of far horizons has been spoken of as an individual with a vision. Now, what's the value? What is the value of vision? Well, I look at Nehemiah's life. I see that there was a characteristic there that he inspired others to work. If you look in chapter 4, it says in verse 6, "So we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work." As you read through the first, say, 7 chapters of this book, you'll find an amazing thing took place. The same group of discouraged individuals, the same group that had no hope, that had no vision, that could not see it accomplished, could not see the task fulfilled, were the ones that gave themselves with great enthusiasm. And he used some planning for this. He worked them together as far as their families worked together and built right in front of their own homes. And he used the motivation of the families protecting one another and sharing with one another in the work. All of these things, but it was his life that inspired the other people to work. When he came into the city, he spent 3 nights riding around by himself on his own horse, going around the area to see what needed to happen. As he gathered the people together, then in a large assembly, he gave them a challenge and a dream. But he first had to have a dream before he could challenge others with a dream. And I think one of the things that is oftentimes lacking in the ministry is, as far as motivating others, is that there has got to be something within. There's got to be something that I see clearly, something to which I have given my own life to, and that is it is an internal motivation. It's not just an external force coming in the form of your pastor or coming in the form of your leadership family or something of this nature where you're trying, because of position, to rally others. But there is something that has happened internally. The Spirit of God's moving and working in your life. And is that kind of a real overflow goes, one of the great values of vision is it challenges others. It's in a contagious force. It inspires others to work. And one of the most exciting stories to me is an oldie. It's an oldie but a goodie, I guess. Is a story about the University of Illinois versus the University of Wisconsin football game. A lot of you have heard it. It's a number of years ago. Illinois hadn't won a game. Wisconsin hadn't lost a game. You know, it was one of those kind of deals. The sports writers were just talking about the disaster that would be coming on the coming Saturday. The guys from Illinois were praying for the rapture or hoping they'd get hurt or something in practice. You know, anything to face those mean old guys. But the day came. First half went as expected. Wisconsin was wiping them out. When it came to the halftime, Illinois knew they were wiped. All but one guy. The story says it was the smallest guy on the team, a little safety, and he believed they could win the game. And from one guy to the next guy, around the locker room he went, just simply saying, "We can win, we can win, we can win." Time after time, he went around and said to the guys, and something happened. You've been in situations like that where the old adrenaline begins to flow, and there was somebody that was in a motivational force there, and that exact same thing began to move in that team. The story goes that the fans couldn't believe what they were viewing. The sports writers couldn't believe what they had to write. But University of Illinois that day defeated the University of Wisconsin because one guy had a dream. We can win. I believe that God desires to use our lives as that kind of a motivational force that inspires other people to work. But before that can ever take place, we individually have to have a dream. We must have a vision to inspire others to work. Another thing that I see in the way of value here, as I look in the life of Nehemiah, is that it challenges one to give his all to the task. It challenges one to give his all to the task. A vision works toward building character. It stretches the individual who possesses it. You know, from time to time, I find ministers who have somewhat of a martyr's complex. You know, here I am, suffering for Jesus. Nobody appreciates me. Giving everything I have, and, you know, I'm just kind of taken for granted here. Poor me. You ever get around people like that? Tremendous motivation to be around. One of the things that I see as a result of vision, that when my own heart and my own life is so burdened and consumed with the task that confronts me, is that whatever it calls for out of my life, it liberates me from a martyr's complex. I can give my life away and give it away freely and never have to look back to see if I've been taken advantage of or not. I can give myself with joy and with abandonment when it is such an internal burden within my own life and such a desire to see my world reached. I see that happening in Nehemiah's life. He was the governor. He was appointed the governor, and yet as he was one who freely gave, as you see in verse 5, chapter 5, rather, as opposed to laying a heavy tax on the people as other people did, he invited, in verse 17, 150 Jews and officials into his own home. He provided for that. As opposed to playing the role where he stood back and everybody else did the work, he was out on the wall working himself. It challenged his life in such a way that he gave what he had to give with a sense of abandonment to that. Now look at such guys like C.T. Studd. How many of you have read his life story? A couple of you here. He was a cricketer player, part of the Cambridge Five, came from a very wealthy family, a very affluent individual. And yet, as God got a hold of his life while he was there in college, something took place. There was an inner dynamic that called for his life. And he got a vision, a burden for Africa, and gave up what people said, what others were looking for, and individuals said he was a fool. And yet there was no sense of a martyr's complex there to his life. But as opposed to that, freely giving his life away, he invested the rest of his years in Africa, accomplishing a great deal. Norman Grubb has written a biography about it, and I'd challenge you to read. I look at guys, even some of our contemporaries, and people during the times of the Protestant Reformation, and see different individuals that so freely gave of their lives, they accomplished something. I believe it was a result of vision. Another thing that I see as a value is that vision produces discipline. Vision produces discipline. One of the things that is lacking in our world today is that discipline to press on, to continue. How many of us have come to conferences like this and we've got all motivated and excited? We've heard a man like Dr. Price share concerning having a quiet time, and we've seen the value of what that could be in our life, and in our a moment of glory, we've said, boy, sign me up. I'll meet with God every day. And yet before long, we end up just kind of fizzling out along the way. That discipline to hang in there. We've got some things basically nailed down in our lives to say, you know, I really would love to see just a tremendous ministry take place here. I want to see kids saved. I want to see youth motivated and equipped. And yet there's that lack of discipline in our lives that defeats our very ministry. I think one of the problems of that, what I believe is at the very heart of it, is vision. Whenever there's that vision that is so real within my own spirit, in my own life, that I see it clearly, and by day and by night it motivates and guides my life, that it calls for that kind of a stretching day as a... It challenges my life to give my all to the task, and it produces discipline. You know, it is no drudgery to give my life to something that I desire with all of my heart. You take a group of guys out even playing sports, and that discipline of hanging in there, if he can see clearly the goal, if he can see the value of the prize, and by day and by night the value of that prize is before his life, the drudgery of that discipline vanishes because he is believing it. You know, vision relates to faith. It allows you to look at what is not seen is already accomplished so it can be accomplished. And I think when you see the job through the eyes of a task fulfilled, that there is a production in your life that will never be accomplished any other way. You ever have any struggle with selfishness? A lack of a willingness to really give your life away? Feeling like you're the only one out on the firing line and that other people aren't nearly as committed? From time to time feel like you're being some ways taken advantage of? I suggest to you that what we need today is a fresh vision from God. If you have any trouble in the sense of following through and persevering, no matter what others do, if they stand or if they fall, for you to continue with the discipline in your life, pressing on to a goal, I suggest to you today that what we need is real vision, a fresh vision from God. Another quality that stands out, as I see the value of this, well, let me share on this thing with discipline another thing. Douglas Thornton was a missionary to Egypt, and he made this statement. He said, "I find that the constant inspiration gained by looking at the goal is the chief thing that helps me to persevere." In Hebrews 11 chapter, verse 37-38, you see these individuals who were faithful men because they had their eyes on a goal. It's been said, a vision without a task makes a visionary. And a task without a vision is drudgery. But a vision with a task makes a missionary. And that's what we need. I love to read biographies. They inspire my life. Howard Hendricks says that those individuals that serve as a constant downer to your life are luxuries that you cannot afford. But you should seek out individuals that challenge and motivate your life. And as a part of the discipline to be a productive individual, I think it's a very fruitful practice to saturate your mind with the challenge of other men that have faithfully run the race. One of those men that has been a challenge to my life is Hudson Taylor. How many of you read his biography? A few more. Productive study. Hudson Taylor, as a young man, began to dream of that weird, far-off land of China. He trained and prepared to be as a medical missionary. He went to school with the realization that if he couldn't pray and move the hand of God while here at home to meet and provide for his needs, that he would not be able to do that in that far-off land of China. So without telling anyone of his needs, he simply told God while he was here. And he worked for a guy that was not real faithful in paying him. From time to time would forget. And he purposed that he'd never tell him. And he said, "I just pray." And as God worked in that situation, his needs were taken care of. And he went on to China. And while there, he met his wife-to-be, and they were married, had a family. I study the discipline that came in this man's life. You know, sometimes we think of these guys, these saints, as being individuals that all they did was simply to pray. And they spent this vast amount of time in prayer, and then that God just brought this great spiritual harvest. Taylor spent a vast amount of time in prayer and a vast amount of time in Bible study, but was an extremely disciplined man. He dreamed and developed strategy and worked those strategies out. While his health broke and he laid on his bed, he had a map of China on his wall, and he used that as a time of prayer and believed God for saturation of China. There came a time when the help, the financial support that was given to him came as a result of people neglecting their bills here in the homeland or there in the homeland. And he said that that was not right. And he cut off all support. And through faith, there was a period in time when there were over 2,000 missionaries that were there through the China Inland Mission, established by Hudson Taylor as a result of a faith walk. And I look at his life and the discipline, the vision that produced that discipline stretches my imagination. I visualize him as he stood by the child, his own child, his daughter's graveside one day. And I remember reading through that story, and I read that chapter, I guess, 10 times. He said, you know, God had given me a promise, and the promise was, they shall never thirst, never thirst. He said, I looked at that child, and I saw that graveside, and the tears came streaming down my face, and he said, for weeks I thought I'd die on the inside. He said, over and over again, everything inside me ached and ached and ached. He said, I just kept giving back to God. They shall never thirst. They shall never thirst. They shall never thirst. That's spiritual warfare. Everything on the inside said quit. Everything on the inside said it's not worth the cost. Everything on the inside said, why should I be out here struggling and dying when nobody seems to care? But I want you to know it was vision that led to perseverance. I don't know exactly how to explain it all, but I know that you can move in situations. The most encouraging thing that I found when I went to West Palm Beach was the pastor's conference. The note that seemed to run as a refrain was how difficult it was to serve Jesus on the Gold Coast, how that nobody was too much interested in hearing about the gospel. That this is a recreational area, that people have come down here to retire and there's a lot of money and they're not really interested in church. And over I begin to hear about the less than 5% that was in church. And yet I look around me and there are a few individuals in that area that are getting the job done. And literally hundreds of people through their ministries are being touched. I see that in cities just like the cities that you're a part of. There are some people that are sitting on the sidelines and saying it can't be done. It won't be accomplished. Boy, it's tough to serve Jesus here. Kids just aren't responsive. The parents don't care. You know, the situation that I'm in, my staff, my church, my facilities, my budget, my problems. And there are those that focus on the negative. And while they focus on the negative, their whole world, their community lies dormant and dead. And yet somebody else comes in that exact same situation and is a result of a life that is being filled with the Spirit of God and is flowing with the Spirit of God and having eyes to see what other people fail to see. Then through an available life, there comes a harvest. There were a few people in Jesus' day who saw that the fields were white. But the fields were white. And I believe everything in me, the fields are white today. And God is simply looking for men and women to stand in the gap, men and women who are not going to limit God because of a lack of a willingness to dream, or not limit God in what they believe that God can do. Now, how do you develop a vision? How do you develop a vision? One of the things I'd begin with is obvious in prayer. It's amazing the number of times that the Apostle Paul prayed that the eyes of your heart would be enlightened. He prayed that you'd be able to see, that you would understand, that you'd comprehend. When I look in the first chapter, the book of Nehemiah, in verse 6 it says, "Let thine ear now be attentive and thy eyes open to hear the prayer of thy servant which I am praying before thee now, day and night. On behalf of the sons of Israel, thy servants, confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which they have sinned against thee, I and my father's house have sinned. We've acted very corruptly." It's a prayer coming out of the heart of Nehemiah of confession and calling upon God. But then he began to give God back the words that he had given through his servant Moses. And he was putting it to God in the sense of saying, "Lord, you have promised." I believe that one of the things that results in vision in our own life is that we begin to pray that our own eyes would be opened to see. And that we begin, as we go through the Word of God, even as we study the prayers here and see the people that have that have communicated with God and have given God back His Word, that God opens our eyes as we come with an earnest desire to see clearly whatever that cost would be for our lives. We pray for that. I think another thing that comes is that growth must develop and be seen in a number of places of Scripture. But two things I want to emphasize as far as the development of vision for your ministry. One thing is you must see God. There are two things you need to see if you're going to have a vision. And the first thing is that you must see God. This summer we spent about 12 weeks studying on how to have a vision, or rather, how to see God. And to see the implications of my style of ministry as far as my concept of God, the relationship between the two. When I see God and who He is and see Him in all of His glory and all of His power and all of His majesty, that challenges my life to live a life of faith. If I can see how great God is, then I can realize that there's no request that I could ever make that would ever bankrupt heaven. There's no check that I'd ever write that'd be too great. There's no situation that's too difficult for my God. There's no ministry that's too hard or problem that's too great for Him to overcome. The thing I need to do today is get a fresh glimpse of God. I need to see that He is the God today who is able to do far more than I've ever even dreamed about. And that should challenge my life to dream a greater dream. Another thing I need to see as I look at God is I need to see His plan and purpose. The most productive form in ministry is to find out what God's up to and join Him in it. You know, it's a winner. I need to find out what God desires to do in my world and get on that team, because He's a winner. When I begin to study through the Word, the thing that I become obsessed with is the fact that mission redemption is going on, desires to be going on in my life. He desires for me to know Him and be conformed into His image. And He desires that my life would be an available instrument through which He could flow to do today exactly what He came to do almost 2,000 years ago, to see men reconciled to Himself and brought into fellowship to Himself. When I look at that, I need to evaluate every part of my ministry based upon God's purpose and God's plan. There's another thing I believe I need to see about God. I need to see the position that He is in me and I am in Him. You see, when I see the person, that gives me the scope of my vision. When I see His plan, that gives me the direction of my vision. And when I see the position that I am in Him and He is in me, that gives me the challenge to dream. I think it's Wolfman who's written a great deal on the theology of hope, of saying that we live in a world that needs hope, that needs a dream, that needs something positive, that needs to be able to believe that there is a hope for our world. And I see that coming when people see God. There's another thing that I believe that you must see clearly if you're to have a vision for your ministry. And that is that you need not only to see God, you need to see the ministry from God's perspective. You need to see the ministry from God's perspective. From time to time, people will say, well, what ministry? The one you have now. Whatever that is, whatever position you are, not all of you are full-time in a church. Some of you have come from other places. Whatever your ministry is, that's where you begin. I believe it's a New Testament principle that you start where you are. And if you're a faithful man or woman in that area, then God opens up additional doors. But as long as you have those delusions of grandeur that say, boy, when I get in the right position for my life, then I'm going to really shine, that it'll never happen. You begin where you are, and as a faithful man digging in and allowing God to develop your life there, then it's God's responsibility to broaden the ministry. But you start where you are. Now, how do you do that? I think one thing, you begin by seeing the ministry in its fullest potential. What kind of God do you have? What size God do you have? Dawson Trotman says, it brings no honor and glory to God when you ask for peanuts when He desires to give you continents. What size God do you have? See, the kind of God that's able to bring 5 more kids to your joy explosion? 10 more kids? Is your high school within his scope of power? Can he win the kids in your high school, that tough old college? Can he work on that campus? Can he penetrate Houston? Can he bring a revival to the United States? What kind of God do you have? I think you should look at your specific area of ministry and dream of it in its fullest potential. When I first went to West Palm, one of the things I began to do, the first day there, I began to just drive the streets. I knew nothing of that area. I knew nobody in that area. And I just began to drive the streets, and I'd see, my mind automatically goes to kids. You know, I'm having a hard time making that transition, you know. But I would see kids on street corners, and I'd see kids here and kids here. And there was a recreation center over here, and there's something over there, and there's a beach down the way. And I begin that first day just to say, God, give me eyes to see what you see, and don't let me limit you. Because I'm holding you back because I can't see it like you see it. I think you should ask God during the course of this week to open your eyes to see your ministry in its fullest potential and dream a dream. And don't limit God in your dream. I think another thing that you need to do along with that is that you need to brainstorm how that becomes a reality. You need to brainstorm how that becomes a reality. Nehemiah spent a lot of time in planning, and I've kind of skipped going through the books to point out the places where this relates in the book of Nehemiah because of time. But Nehemiah was one, as you would read through his concept of God in the first chapter, in the fourth chapter, of how he saw God as a high and lofty, majestic being as a challenge to my life. And when I see the specific ways that Nehemiah planned to carry out this vision, is also a challenge to my life. It was no haphazard thing. He got the okay from the king to get the timbers and to do all these various things. He planned it out. So you need to brainstorm how this can become a reality in your life and through your ministry. You've got the dream, and you begin to think of all the possible ways. The next thing you do is you pick the very best plan. Let's say we're going to focus today on joy explosion. And you have something of that nature within your ministry or something that you're a part of. You're going to focus on joy explosion. You begin to dream of that in its highest potential. And you think of all the ways that that can become a reality. And you write them down. You brainstorm on each of those areas. And then you come back and you pick out the best way for that to become a reality. You pick out the best approach. And after you've picked out the best approach, then you begin to schedule it. After you've brainstormed, you've done your planning, then you start scheduling. And you ask yourself, what are we going to do? How are we going to do it? When are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? And by when is it going to be done? That sound familiar, girl? They've been on staff with us before. Now, I believe in this. I believe that it's when you get really specific with your dream and you don't have just a lofty dream, boy, we could just win our whole city. We could have hundreds of kids at Joy Explosion. Super. Are you going to do that? When are you going to do that? Who's going to do that? What's your deadline for having that done? That's when vision becomes a productive tool for ministry. And anything less than that is slothfulness in ministry. You can't blame it on God and He's not willing to work. You've got to come back to blame it on yourself because you've not covered the bases. And the kids are not in your ministry because you have limited God, because you have not been faithful to your own areas of responsibility. I want us to take some time of word today. We're going to dream about joy explosion. I want to take one specific area of ministry. And if you're here and that is not, you don't have that area of responsibility, what I'd like for you to do is to think about your specific area, an area that you are responsible for. And maybe you have like a discipleship group, and that's the thing that you are personally responsible for in ministry. Then I want you to, number one, dream of that in its greatest potential. See it in such a way that it brings the greatest glory to the Father. And then I want you to list on paper all the ways that would work towards seeing that become a reality. What can you do to see that become a reality? And list them all down. And then I want you to pick out the very best approaches and begin to schedule it. After we've spent some time on that, then we're going to share some of those things together to see how that vision becomes concrete and how that you get a handle on it. And I'd say this, a vision is something that is to be continued to be dreamed about and refined on a weekly basis. You look at it every week, you evaluate it, you continue to pray about it, you continue to grow with it. In your weekly planning, you move toward those particular periods in your life, whether you do it quarterly or monthly, when you get alone and you begin to dream in a fresh way. But this week can be a fantastic week of you spending some quality time with God and seeing some of this become a reality. So I want us to start during this section. And you begin with joy explosion, if that's one of your areas. Think of it first in its highest form and write out what you see as far as your particular ministry of joy explosion being fulfilled in its greatest potential. Brainstorm, pick the best, and then schedule it, asking the questions, what are we going to do? When are we going to do it? Who's going to do it? By when is it going to be done? Okay? Let's spend the next few minutes on that together.